It's Friday, June 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the city of Charleston, South Carolina, mourns the killing of nine people at an historic church.
You have a lot of local Charlestonians coming to pay their respects. You have neighbors, you have people that are just visiting from out of town.
Greece's prime minister says there will be a solution to the country's debt crisis. And one of Bob Dylan's biggest hits celebrates the half-century mark. It's all ahead. Police in the city of Charleston, South Carolina, say the white suspect arrested after the massacre at an historic black church in Charleston has been charged with nine counts of murder. 21-year-old Dylan Roof also faces a criminal charge of possessing a firearm illegally. He's scheduled to appear in court today for a bail hearing. I'm joined by VOA's Amanda Scott, who's in Charleston. First of all, Amanda, what is known about Roof's possible motivation?
Well, we're not quite clear what his particular motivation is. What we know is that in the past, Roof has expressed racist ideology. We've also had friends of his saying that, you know, if he wasn't particularly a racist, but that he had a sort of Southern pride and a strong conservative outlook. One of the survivors of the attack mentioned him making some racist comments that, you know, I won't necessarily get into the specifics of, but definitely giving an anti-black rhetoric before the shooting took place.
What is it like near the Emmanuel African American Methodist Episcopal Church where these fatal shootings took place on Wednesday night?
Well, right now outside of the church, it's really, you know, you have a lot of local Charlestonians coming to pay their respects. You have neighbors, you have people that are just visiting from out of town, you know, just walking by and embracing each other. There's definitely a sense of solemn in the air as people try and wrap their heads around what happened at the church.
This church has played a significant role in African-American history in the city and really in the country. What is some of that history?
So the church was founded in 1816 by a man who was formerly a slave but was able to buy his freedom. Since then, the church has pretty much been the pinnacle of Charleston's African-American community. In the 1960s, Martin Luther King gave a speech there during the Civil Rights Movement. The church has suffered an earthquake. It's been burnt down, and at one point it was actually banned by the state of Carolina, but it's always remained, and it's always been a strong part of African-American life and culture and religion for the city.
Is it known where there are plans for memorial services for the victims?
Well, I was able to speak to a member of the congregation earlier today. At the present, he said they're in the planning stages of memorializing those nine victims of the attack. He also mentioned that they're currently unsure of whether or not they will be holding the usual church service on Sunday.
That's VOA's Amanda Scott reporting from Charleston, South Carolina. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Polshevsky with a look at what's trending. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, unfortunately, what's trending today is the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. As everyone knows by now, Dylan Roof, a 21-year-old young man, went into this historically black church in Charleston, shot and killed nine people. The hashtag Charleston shooting was used throughout the day yesterday and still being used today to share information, grieve for the victims. Yesterday, it was used 869,000 times. So that's just an idea of the scope of this tragedy and how it's playing out on social media.
Yeah, an immense impact.
Absolutely. And now we have kind of these other stories that are coming out from this tragedy. One of them is Debbie Dills. She's trending on social media this morning. She's the woman, she was driving to work, she's a florist in North Carolina, and she sees a car, and she thinks it's the car that Dylan Roof is described as driving the suspect in the shooting. So she calls her boss, and she says, oh, I think this is him. She follows the car for 56 kilometers with police on the phone. Sure enough, it was Dylan Roof, and that's how they apprehended him. So she's trending on social media today, people calling her a hero, saying that she was the one who stopped him from potentially doing this again and from helping police to find him. And we also have trending Jon Stewart. He's the host of The Daily Show here in the U.S., and he's trending this morning, and there's a viral video of him from his show last night. He went on the air, and his show is a satire. He makes fun of politicians. He has a lot of jokes. But he said last night, he said, quote, I have one job, and it's a pretty simple job. I come in the morning, we look at the news, and I write jokes about it, but I didn't do my job today, so I apologize. And he goes on for about 5 minutes with a very serious discussion on race, on calling this a terrorist act, talking about some of the gun control laws, things that are behind this attack, and saying just how what a tragedy it is, and that this happens again and again in the U.S., but there's no action on it. It's very similar to another viral video from his show right after the September 11th attacks. He came back on the air and had a monologue where he got very emotional and very passionate. So very similar to that. That video is going all over the internet today, and he's a trending topic.
Thanks, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pulshevsky. European Union finance ministers met in Luxembourg Friday ahead of an emergency summit on Greece Monday. Eurozone finance ministers did not have a breakthrough 1 day earlier in a cash for reform arrangement with Greece. After the Friday meeting, top EU finance officials said that Greece's finance minister did not present proposals they had anticipated. However, Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras said Friday he was looking forward to the emergency summit on Monday. For more on the Greek debt crisis, I'm joined by VOA's Ira Melman.
Joining us now to talk about this is Mauro Gillen. He's the director of the Lauder Institute at the Wharton School of Business in Philadelphia. How serious would it be if Greece did indeed leave the Union?
Well, for Greece itself, it would be very traumatic because foreign investors, as you can imagine, will take their money out. Greek nationals will also try to take their money out. As a result of that, there would be very little money available for investment and for creating jobs. All of those contracts, you know, literally millions of contracts, anywhere from, you know, a car loan to a lease on a house denominated in euros would need to be renegotiated, right? And then be denominated in whatever new currency they adopt, the drachma, right, which is the currency that they used to have. So just imagine the litigation that would occur in the wake of all of those negotiations. It would be bad for Europe because essentially this would demonstrate that the European currency union was not forever. In 1999, it was launched as if it were irrevocable, as if it were going to last forever. And if one country gets out, that means that more countries could get out. And so the danger is also for Europe, but I think it's also for the global economy as a whole. Remember, Europe is about 25% of the global economy. And from a financial point of view, Europe plays an even more important role in the world. So it will be yet another source of instability and uncertainty for everyone, including the United States. So I think it's in everybody's interest to try to fix the Greek problem. But the issue is, are the Europeans willing to go all the way and come up with a permanent solution, or do they want to just keep on kicking the can down the road? I am a little bit pessimistic about the prospects for a permanent solution because I just see that the positions of the two sides are just too far apart. It was a crazy idea to think that countries such as Greece and Finland could be in the same monetary union, or that countries like Spain or Portugal and Germany could be in the same monetary scheme. It's just crazy because some countries in Europe are very thrifty, very frugal. They're very much focused on productivity. And other countries, you know, for whatever set of reasons, they are not, right? And so it's very difficult to have one currency, one interest rate, one monetary policy for both kinds of countries.
Professor, I thank you so much for giving us the time you have. And hopefully this helps out informing people around the world what's going on.
Thank you for having me.
That's Mauro Gillen of the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute. Japanese technology company SoftBank recently introduced what it calls a robot with a heart. Pepper the robot introduced himself to the audience at SoftBank's recent introductory press conference. Last June, I received a heart and debuted as the world's first personal robot with emotion-detecting capabilities. And I have in me emotions I can feel. Pepper and his fellow robots with a heart have been designed to recognize human emotions and react to them with seeming anger, joy, or even irritation. Throughout the presentation, Pepper talked with guests, danced, sang a song, and showed how it can serve its human master. If you want to buy Pepper, be prepared to spend some good money for him. The cost is $1,600. The robots will be available only in Japan this year, with international sales set to begin in 2016. I'm Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, an iconic Bob Dylan song turns 50. There's some cutting-edge technology on display at this week's Paris Air Show. Here to tell us about it is VOA's George Pudich. Well, what are some of the highlights of this show?
Well, the highlights are very interesting. The electronics are going to change very much, both in the cockpit and in the passenger cabin. The head... mounted displays that we sometimes see on soldiers on their helmets, that they have a visor in front of one eye. Mm. This is coming into cockpits too, because experts think that the today's cockpits are pretty much cluttered, and the pilots have too many things to take care of. So they want to make it easier for them to focus on what's most important. So they will have a little display in front of one eye, which is actually like a little a translucent screen, so that your eye can focus either on the screen and on the information displayed on the screen, or outside, of course, on the large screens in the cockpit. Mm. So that's one of the things that's very, very interesting and important. The other thing is similar. The touch screens are also coming into cockpits. The experts say the mechanical switches, mm-hmm, are going to go away. They're too prone to breakdowns. They're going to introduce, in several years, they're going to introduce touch screens. Some of them will be actually detachable, so pilots will be able to hold the screens that actually control the aircraft on their lap, like a tablet computer.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I guess then though they will have to be extensively retrained, pilots.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And some of them are already training for it. There are already simulators with advanced cockpit designs. So, yes, the pilots are already being trained.
Well, now, what about the passenger section of the plane? How will that differ?
Passenger section is also interesting. Manufacturers say they want passengers to feel, when they enter the aircraft, to feel almost at home. So they want to transfer whatever we do with our electronics at home, like computers or tablets or even TVs, to have them in front of us in the airplane. So, of course, there are already touch screens on some of the modern aircraft, but the manufacturers say they will be able to include the software that enables calling, communicating with other people off the aircraft, like Skype or similar software. So it's going to be very much different than it's today.
Well, that brings to mind, though, people might be, you might be on a plane sitting next to another person and someone's going to be having an extended conversation. You might not want to have to sit and listen to all that.
Yes, that's true, but we will probably have more sophisticated headsets with, mm-hmm, microphones in front of our mouths, so that they will pick up the slightest sound. So I don't think the conversation would be as loud as when we're using Skype today at home.
Right. Yeah. Well, this Paris Air Show sounds fascinating. This has had a long history there.
Oh, yes. Paris Air Show is one of the biggest in the world, I think.
All right. Well, thanks very much. My thanks to George Pudich. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Music fans, and especially for the so-called baby boomer generation following World War II, iconic songs are now hitting the half-century mark. David Byrd and Ray McDonald sit down here in the studio to discuss one of those songs.
If you remember 1965, you'll remember that the United States had just started sending land troops to a place called Vietnam. Lyndon Baines Johnson was president, and in music, the British invasion, topped by the Beatles, the four lads from Liverpool, had happened just a year before. But that was also the year that a landmark song by Bob Dylan was put out. Ray McDonald joins me here in the studio to talk about Like a Rolling Stone. Ray, why was Like a Rolling Stone so revolutionary?
It broke all the rules. To begin with, the song was over 6 minutes long, and it went immediately to number two on the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles chart. That in itself was unheard of. Most singles were 2 and 3 minutes long, and Columbia Records originally split it over two sides of a 45, but the fans insisted on hearing the song itself. Dylan was a folk musician. He was not considered an electric musician, but this song turned him into a rock star, and it put him toe-to-toe with acts like the Beatles. In fact, the Beatles kept him out of number one. Help was at the top the week that Like a Rolling Stone came onto the charts. The lyrics were free-form. They were poetic. They were taken from a long poem that Dylan had written while he was on tour the month before. And the whole thing just seemed perfect for its time.
Dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you, people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they were all kidding you.
How does this compare to some of other Dylan songs, like The Times They Are Changing?
Well, I mean, Dylan got his He made his bones, he made his fame as a protest musician, as a folk musician who initially adapted the folk songs of Woody Guthrie and other folk musicians. He came out of the Greenwich Village folk scene, and as such, he was a bit of a niche performer. Like a Rolling Stone really thrust him into the rock mainstream, and it influenced an entire generation of rock artists. Paul McCartney remembers listening to the song with John Lennon and saying, well, it just seemed to go on forever and it opened new possibilities for us. Bruce Springsteen talks about how that opening snare drum was like kicking a door open in his mind. So he really set the template for artistic creativity within a hard rock setting.
Now, this song came out right before Bob Dylan kind of upset his fan base, all those folk listeners, by going electric. What exactly did this have to do with that?
Like a Rolling Stone hit the shelves on July 20th, 1965, and that was just a few days before Dylan and his band made their famous electric appearance at the Newport, Rhode Island Folk Festival. And that was really Dylan's coming out party for his rock phase. And it upset a lot of his more traditional fans, but it gained him an incredible new audience.
All right, that's VOA's Ray McDonald. You can hit him up at VOA_music on Twitter. You can also go on to our webpage, that's voanews.com. You can hear Ray count down the top 20 songs of the week and the top 5 songs of the week.
The music of Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It is all well and good to have legal guarantees of human rights, including freedoms of speech, assembly, and religion. But without the legal institutions to enforce such rights in the communities where most people live, these rights rarely become reality, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski. In many African countries, access to justice is hampered by too few courts and legal professionals, too long a distance between communities and institutions of justice, too little knowledge about the content of the law, and by corruption that breeds distrust of the justice system. Mali, for instance, has 300 lawyers for a population of 15 million. The majority of them live in Bamako, so despite laws providing for free legal aid, if you're a poor person upcountry, you don't have much of a chance to get it. That's why the United States is supporting the African Center for Justice and Mobile Courts. The interconnectedness of the world means that even people in remote and impoverished areas have a greater sense of their rights. A case in point is a widow and mother of 3 young girls in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. After her husband's death, her in-laws threw her and her children out of their home. The mother found her way to a legal aid clinic that was able to point her toward Congolese laws supporting equal treatment of male and female children. And with the clinic's help, she and her daughters were able to return to their home. Access to justice doesn't just mean access to courts, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski. It means access to information and to government services from a government that is responsive to their needs. And the most responsive governments are those that are freely elected by citizens and that respect term limits in office. The United States wants to see systems of governance and justice that focus on citizens and that work for and empower the poorest people in society. This is the right thing to do. It's also the smart thing to do if you want to build stable, peaceful, prosperous, and just societies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
Take your pick, watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at VOA.